Raja, the son. Nripa, O king. Translation. The son of Vivimsati was Ramba, whose son was the great and religious King Kaninetra. O king, the son of Kaninetra was King Karandama. Text 26. Tesyavisit sutoyasya marutas chakravartya bhut sambarto jagnaya dyambai mahayogyaningiratsuta. From Karandama came a son named Avikshit, and from Avikshit a son named Maruta, who was the emperor. The great mystic Samvrata, the son of Angira, engaged Maruta in performing a sacrifice or yajna. Text 27. Marutasya yato yajno nata tanyosi kanchana sarvam hiranyayam tasid yas kanchit chasya sobanam. The sacrificial paraphernalia of King Maruta was extremely beautiful, for everything was made of gold. Indeed, no other sacrifice could compare to this. Amay dhyadindra somena dakshina bhirdvijataya maruta parivestaro vivesha dhyasata sabda. In that sacrifice, King Indra became intoxicated by drinking a large quantity of somarasa. The Brahmins received ample contributions, and therefore they were satisfied. For that sacrifice, the various demigods who control the winds offered foodstuffs, and the Visvadevas were members of that assembly. This verse has a purport. Because of the yajna performed by Maruta, everyone was pleased, especially the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Brahmins are interested in receiving contributions as priests, and Kshatriyas are interested in drinking. All of them, therefore, were satisfied with their different engagements. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Agyanandana Sarakaya Chashurun Nivetam Gena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha. So 25 was Vivam sate sato ramba kani netro siddharmika karandama maharaja tasyasya atmajo nripa. The son of Vivimsati was Ramba, whose son was the great and religious King Kaninetra. O king, the son of Kaninetra was named King Karandama. About a month ago, I started reading Krishna book again. And rather than just reading the Krishna book, well, I'm recording it like an audio book, which means I have to do it like over and over again so that each sentence is right. But along with that, I wanted to also study Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sarartha Darshini, which is his commentary on each verse. And I came across a purport that kind of jumped out at the page. So I want to share this purport, which links to the verse, and then tie that in with this back in the ninth canto. When you hear the purport, it's self-evident why one would pay attention to it. One should take this verse as a Paribhasya Sutra of Krishna Lila. As a lamp sits in one place in a dark room and lights up the whole room, so that statement in the scriptures, which can reveal the meaning of all the scriptures, or regulate the meaning of all scriptures, is called the Paribhasya Sutra. This verse stands as a regulator for all the pastimes related to Aishwarya shown during Krishna's Kumara and Kaishur ages in Mathura, Kurukshetra, and elsewhere. Whoa! That's a huge statement. This verse is like a lamp in a dark room and shines and illuminates all other verses dealing with Krishna's lila. Obviously, this is an important lila, important verse. And the verse is not one that's well known or often quoted. The verse is, the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. And yet, Madhu Yasoda considered that supreme person for ordinary child. So the question arises, how does this verse and these sections where Sukadeva Goswami is making a long line of lists, several months back, maybe 5 or 6 months back, there was amongst the speakers, there was actually an email when we were entering into the last half of the eighth canto, where there was a discussion, well, now there's just a big long list of different kings and dynasties, should we go back to the first canto rather than going through all these different names? And ultimately it was decided, obviously, that we would continue. So I wanted to try and tie how Sukadeva Goswami is weaving his tapestry of presenting this to Maharaj Parikit with a specific purpose. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, it's Vyasadeva. Sukadeva Goswami doesn't even begin speaking until the second canto. In the first canto, we get like a foundation and a present time development of setting the scene. Maharaj Parikit's been cursed. He has 7 days to live. At the end of the canto, it comes to the point where Sukadeva Goswami comes to greet and meet him and begins, sits down, is welcomed by everyone, and gets ready to speak. But prior to that, in the setting of the scene, we have Suta Goswami. Suta uvacha dvaipare samanuparte tritiye yugapare tata parasayad yogi vasavyam karayahare. Suta Goswami said, when the second millennium overlapped the third, the great sage Vyasadeva was born to Parasara in the womb of Satyavati, the daughter of the Vasu. Purport. There's a chronological order of the four millenniums, namely Satya, Dwarpa, Treta, and Kali. Dwarpa, Dwa, Du, Duo, Two, and Treta, Tri, Three. So Dwarpa generally becomes before Treta Yuga. But sometimes there's an overlapping. During the regime of Vaivashvata Manu, there was an overlapping of the 28th round of the four millenniums of the third millennium appeared prior to the second. Each of the four millenniums, Kali Yuga, Satya Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Kali Yuga, revolve several times in the life of a Manu. How many times? Anyone remember? So how it says 28th millennium, 28th time, 20, halfway of 71, means halfway through, then there was an anomaly. So he's describing time as a length of an experience, the length of the universe, and halfway through that, there's this anomaly. Lord Sri Krishna, in that particular millennium, when there's this overlapping, Lord Sri Krishna also descends. And because of this, there was some particular alteration. The mother of the great sage was Satyavati, the daughter of the Vasu, and the father was the great Parasara Muni. That is the history of Vyasadeva's birth. Every millennium is divided into three periods, and each period is called a sandhya. Vyasadeva appeared in the third sandhya of that particular age. So what Sukadeva Goswami, what Suta Goswami is doing, is setting the stage for Sukadeva Goswami to come. When Sukadeva Goswami arrives, the first thing he speaks about is the first step in self-realization, the first step in God-realization. Cause of all causes. Purusha Shukta confirmed. So he's establishing, offering his obeisances to the great supreme personality of Godhead who creates the universe. And then he goes into a conversation where Narada Muni and Lord Brahma are discussing. You might remember that Narada Muni comes to Lord Brahma and he knows he's the creator of the universe. But he sees that he's meditating and doing some austerities. So he's asking, aren't you the supreme person? You created this universe. Who are you doing austerities for? Why would you perform austerities if you're supreme? So then Lord Brahma begins to explain, no, who is supreme? Who is that? I am also created, and starts to describe the universe. In the third canto, we switch to Vidura and Maitreya, and more structural information about the universe, time as calculated by the atom, Lord Brahma's creative prayers. There's a little bit of history of the incarnations of the Lord. Remember the Prajapatis, Kasyapa, Ditis, untimely union, and the birth of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakasipu, Lord Varaha's appearance day, Kasyapa and Adi and Devahuti had Kapila, and then there's some explanation of the difference between matter and spirit. Fourth canto, we continue with that conversation. Lord Shiva, Daksha, the Prachetas, Dhruva Maharaj, Prithu, fifth canto, structure of the universe. He's describing Purana. The word means old, like Bahut Purana means it's very old. A Purana describes the history of the universe, all 18 Puranas. The Shiva Purana even describes the universe, history of the universe, but from the point of view of Lord Shiva. So the structure of the universe, at the end of that chapter, at the end of that canto, when he had described heavens and hells, Maharaj Prakrit said, how can we become freed from this imprisonment? And he goes into the story of Ajamil, Chitraketu. Then in the eighth canto, we have Vamana, we just read about him. And what happens now, in the eighth canto, is Sukadeva Goswami, after he's described this whole big universe, the creation of it, some different time periods, some different Manus, some different dynasties, now he's bringing it back to Vaivashvata Manu. This chapter we're reading today is called The Dynasties of the Sons of Manu. And in the beginning of the chapter, it describes, the second chapter describes the dynasties of the sons of Manu headed by Karusha. After Sudyumna accepted the order of Vanaprastha and departed for the forest, Vaivashvata Manu, being desirous of sons, worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and consequently begot 10 sons like Maharaj Ikshvaku, all of whom were like their father. So, in his beautiful narration, Sukadev Goswami has super intelligently brought the entire narrative now, coming into the ninth canto, to Vaivashvata Manu, because he's leading up to something. He's setting the scene the entire time, but he's using personalities. He's giving examples of so many different people, events that happened in their life, intrigues, narrations about people. Therefore, what happens when we come to this person of Krishna is that we have a much more personal understanding of who this is. It's not just some great personality that created the universe. We actually understand how he's the supreme amongst all the other people, amongst all the other narratives that have been described previously. His is unique. He is a unique person. He's the most supreme person. So in this description of Vaivashvata Manu's reign, he'll come to, in this ninth canto, Yayati. And in Yayati, had what was it, four or five sons? The eldest of whom was? Who? Yadu. Yadu is the family into which Krishna will appear, the Yadu dynasty. Don't really know. I tried to do some research and find out why Yadu is such a unique personality. You see this big list in the genealogical table. Yadu is there. He refused his father's request for his youth and was subsequently not given the entire kingdom after. So after Yadu, they'll go on to different descendants to Yayati. And Yayati had a son named Devamida. Devamita was also a king, and that king had different wives, some kshatriyas and a vaishya wife. From his kshatriya wife, he had a son named Sura, and from his vaishya wife, he had a son named Parjanya. So Parjanya and Sura were brothers from the same father, but different mothers. Sura had a son named Vasudev, and Parjanya had a son named Nanda. So Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev are related because they have the same grandfather with different mothers, grandmothers. So we're bringing this whole family scene into the realm of understanding who is Krishna. Krishna and Balaram appeared here. They're people. They have a family. It's not just that the Supreme like plays a part, like an actor is one person, and then he comes and he plays another part, but he's not really that person. No, Krishna and Balaram are people. And Sukadev Goswami's super beautiful tapestry of narration brings us to understand that in a very subtle form by describing all these different peoples and events and things, and now he's brought it to this particular, bringing it to this setup. You might remember when Kamsa was driving the chariot. Prior to that, you remember right in the beginning of the 10th canto, Bhumi was feeling so much disturbance due to the buildup of military strength on earth that she went to Lord Brahma. And then everybody went to Svetadweep and prayed to Lord Kshirodakshai Vishnu, please help. And then the transmission came to Lord Brahma that all you demigods should take birth where? In the Yadu dynasty. You all appear and assist the Lord. So we have this whole universal cooperation of all these people that have been described in earlier cantos coming together to create a lila and assist in the lila of the supreme person in the Yadu dynasty and in the entire creation who will come and perform his pastimes. Now, once they've appeared, once they're all there, want to kind of get into the love of Mother Yasoda and try to share with you what happens to me when I was reading Krishna book and then reading the Sarartha Darshini together with it, to see if you can also appreciate that part. But prior to that, explain a little bit from Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's explanation of why Krishna comes. What is his reason for coming to this material world? The Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. The Lord wanted to taste the sweet essence of the mellows of love of Godhead. The mellows of love of Godhead. Krishna's babyhood pastimes. What's that verse in Brahma Samhita that describes the Lord as eternally youthful? Navayovanam cha. Right? He's eternally youthful. In Goloka, there's no babyhood pastime. There's no birth, appearance of Krishna as a little tiny baby in Goloka Vrindavan. He's Navayovanam cha. He's eternally youthful. But his Bhauma Leela, when the Lord travels and performs his Leela in different universes, he brings with him his Nitya Siddha associates from the spiritual sky and relates with them in ways that he doesn't even relate with them in the spiritual sky. So one reason that the Lord appeared was he wanted to taste the sweet essence of these mellows. And he wanted to propagate devotional service in this world on the platform of spontaneous attraction. Lord Krishna thought, all the universe is filled with the conception of my majesty, but love, weakened by that sense of majesty, does not satisfy me. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love, nor can it control me. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That's my natural behavior. than from Bhagavad Gita. In whatever way my devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. If one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great and considering me his equal or even inferior, I become subordinate to him. This is a verse from the 10th canto when Krishna met with the gopis at Kurukshetra. They were feeling great pain and separation. During this first 11 years of his life, and we'll read about a little bit of the affection that developed, just like anyone who has children, the first 11 years of their life is so endearing. You watch this little child, practically helpless, come into the world, you nourish it, take care of it, different events happen in each and everybody's life, and so much attachment grows and love grows. What to speak of Krishna and his associates, and the love and attraction and affection and attachment. And all of a sudden, when he was 11, he left and went to Mathura and never came back. How much suffering and separation they were feeling. So then they finally met years later at Kurukshetra, and Krishna said, "Devotional service rendered to me by the living beings revives their eternal life. My dear damsels of Braj, your affection for me is your good fortune, for it is the only means by which you have attained my favor." If we have affection for Krishna, he reciprocates. It's his natural. It's as natural as anything. It's his nature. Mother sometimes binds me as her son. She nourishes and protects me, thinking me utterly helpless. My friends climb on my shoulders in pure friendship, saying, "What kind of big man are you? You and I are equal." If my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, that steals my mind from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Taking these pure devotees with me, I shall descend and sport in various ways, unknown even in Vaikuntha. I shall broadcast such pastimes by which even I am amazed. So, now let's enter and just hear about the glories of Mother Yasoda's love. This is the pastime, of course, everybody knows it, but we'll read it, and just by hearing it, and then hearing it again from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's point of view, it kind of blossoms the flower of the events. Another day, when Krishna and Balaram were playing with their friends, all the boys joined Balaram and told Mother Yasoda that Krishna had eaten clay. On hearing this, Mother Yasoda caught hold of Krishna's hand and said, "My dear Krishna, why have you eaten earth in a solitary place? Just see, all your friends, including Balaram, are complaining about you." Being afraid of his mother, this pastime took place. It's very clearly described that when Krishna was 1 year old was when that Trinavarta demon took him away. So he's barely able to stand up. He's barely able to walk around. He's still grabbing onto the tails of the calves and getting pulled around like water skiing behind the cows through the cow dung, cow urine, and dust of bread. "My brother Balaram, my dear mother, all these boys, including my elder brother Balaram, are speaking lies against me. I've never eaten clay. My elder brother Balaram, while playing with me today, became angry, and therefore he has joined with the other boys to complain against me. They have all combined together to complain to you so that you will be angry and chastise me. If you think they are truthful, then you can look in my mouth and to see whether I have eaten clay or not." His mother replied, "All right. If you have not actually taken any clay, then open your mouth. I want to see." When the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna was so ordered by his mother, he immediately opened his mouth, just like an ordinary boy. Then Mother Yasoda saw within that mouth the complete opulence of creation. She saw the entire outer space in all directions, mountains, islands, oceans, seas, planets, air, fire, moon, and stars. Along with the moon and stars, she also saw the entire elements, water, sky, the extensive ethereal existence, along with the total ego, and the products of the senses, and the controller of the senses, and all the demigods, the objects of the senses like sound, smell, etc., and the three qualities of material nature. She could also perceive within his mouth were all living entities, eternal time, material nature, spiritual nature, activity, consciousness, different forms of the whole creation. Yasoda could find within the mouth of her child everything necessary for the cosmic manifestation. She also saw within his mouth herself taking Krishna on her lap and having him suck her breast. Upon seeing this, she became struck with awe and began to wonder whether she were dreaming or actually seeing something extraordinary. She concluded that she was either dreaming or seeing the play of the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She thought that she had become mad, mentally deranged, to see all these wonderful things. Then she thought, it may be cosmic, it may be a cosmic mystic power attained by my child, and therefore I am perplexed by such visions within his mouth. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under whose energy bodily self and bodily possessions are conceived. She then said, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, under whose illusory energy I'm thinking Nanda Maharaj to be my husband, Krishna is my son, that all these properties of Nanda Maharaj belong to me, and that all these cowherd men and women are my subjects. All this misconception is due to the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord, so let me pray to him that he may always protect us. While Mother Yasoda was thinking in this high philosophical way, Lord Krishna again expanded his internal potencies, just to bewilder her with maternal affection. Immediately, Mother Yasoda forgot all philosophical speculation and simply accepted Krishna as her own child. She took him on her lap and became overwhelmed with maternal affection. She thus began to think, Krishna is not understandable to the masses through the gross process of knowledge, but he can be received through the Upanishads, the Vedanta, or mystic yoga system of Sankhya philosophy. Then she began to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her own begotten child. That last sentence is how Srila Prabhupada translates this one that we read, the Paribhasya Sutra of Krishna Lila. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature, yet Mother Yasoda considered the Supreme Person her ordinary child. So, rather than reading the whole Leela, I'll just read four or five different verses and purports. Her reaction to Krishna, to what she saw, is actually where her love reveals itself. When Mother Yasoda opened his mouth wide by the order of, when Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Yasoda, she saw within his mouth all moving and non-moving entities, outer space, all directions, along with mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the blowing wind, fire, the moon and stars. By the way, this is one of the books that Srila Prabhupada used when he at night would sit and translate. He would refer to other commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam by various previous acharyas. This was one of the ones that he used. She saw the planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and the creation by transformation of a hunkar. She also saw the senses, the mind, sense perception, and the three qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. She saw the time allotted for the living entities. She saw the natural instinct and reactions of karma. And she saw desires of different varieties of bodies, moving and non-moving. Seeing all these aspects of the cosmic manifestation along with herself in Vrindavan Dham, she became doubtful and fearful of her son's nature. Mother Yasoda began to argue within herself, is this a dream? Or is it the illusory? Is it an illusion created by the external energy? Has this been manifested by my own intelligence? Or is it some mystic power of my child? Commentary. Yasoda began to argue within herself about the cause of the vision she was seeing. I'm not dreaming because my eyes are wide open. Is this some illusion created by the demigods? Why should the demigods delude an insignificant person like me? Is it some mental derangement? No, because my mind is stable and I'm in good working order. This vision must be due to some mystic power of my son, since Garga Muni has said that he would have qualities like Narayan. Next verse, 2041. She thought, therefore, let me surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offer my respectful obeisances unto him, who is beyond the conception of human speculation, the mind, activities, words and arguments, who is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, by whom the entire cosmos is manifested, and by whom we can conceive of its existence. Let me simply offer my respectful obeisances, for he is beyond my contemplation, speculation, and meditation. He is beyond all of my material activities. Commentary. Yasoda rejected the last reason after seeing her son's hunger, thirst, naughtiness, and innocence. So, at first she thought, this is due to Krishna's power. Then she realized, but how can that be? He's naughty, he's thirsty, he's hungry, he's angry, he's a little baby. How can he possibly be this person? And Bhakti Rasamrita, the ocean of rasa, starts to manifest in her. She's wondering, she starts to churn these topics, wondering what's causing this. Not finding any real cause for her vision, Yasoda simply offered respects to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who is the ultimate cause of all things beyond our comprehension, and prayed for his protection. Yasoda prayed, the Supreme Lord is the shelter of the visible universe. He creates the universe and is the visible cause of the universe. But he cannot be understood by persons like me. Let me simply offer my respects to his lotus feet with my mind and intelligence, actions and words. May he please remove all these disturbances from my child. 42. She continued to think. It is by the influence of the Supreme Lord's Maya that I'm wrongly thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband, Krishna is my son, and that because I am the queen of Nanda Maharaj, all wealth of the cows and calves are my possessions, and all the cowherd men and their wives are my subjects. Actually, I am eternally subordinate to the Supreme Lord. He is my ultimate shelter. Commentary. Yasoda prayed. The Supreme Lord maintains and protects my son. If that is so, then what is the use of my foolishly thinking in terms of I and mine? So now she's kind of becoming a little bit separate from the maternal Bhav. She's starting to analytically understand and conceive what's taking place here, realizing that it's a supreme power. And she's starting to relate with that supreme power as all powerful, and she's simply bewildered. So she's surrendering in this way and giving up all sense of her position as Krishna's mother, the wife of Nanda Maharaj and queen of Vrindavan in the home of Nanda Maharaj, giving up her false conceptions and surrendering to the Lord. Yasoda speaks, I think that I am the wife of Nanda Maharaj and the queen of all these cowherd men and women of Braj. All the wealth and cows are my possessions. I think that Krishna, who is the life of the residents of Braj, is my son, and that I am his maintainer. By daily worship of Vishnu, the Brahmins and the demigods, by meditation and giving in charity, I myself can give protection to my son. This is all misconception. I should not be so proud, because actually all of Braj's wealth has come by the mercy of Vishnu. Similarly, it was Vishnu's mercy that my child was protected at every moment from demons like Putana. I should not think that I, just as another mother, am among the common cowherds with earthly sentiments, am his protector. This type of logic is temporary and not permanent in Yasoda. It is similar to the temporary desire of the confirmed materialist to give up a wife and family because of some temporary spiritual urge. So Krishna, who is all cognizant, understands that his mother is starting to do this, and this next verse describes what he does and how he's feeling when she starts to analytically separate it. Now how do we take this in our bhajan? It's an interesting meditation, how we react to the different events that happened around us. And oftentimes in devotional service, people kind of think that they're becoming stagnated, not making very much advancement, because in the beginning of their devotional life, they saw this massive transformation of the physical way of life. becoming a vegetarian, getting up early, chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, shaving one's head or wearing a sari, becoming celibate, no more intoxication, no more associating. These are visible, tangible changes that we see going through, so it's obvious I'm making advancement because I see them. But once those things become normal and a way of life, then sometimes people wonder, am I really making any advancement? Well, the advancement can be seen in these kinds of the way we react to things. The events around us are destined. They're going to happen. The only thing that's going to change is our attitude towards those things. And if one can perceive his or her attitude towards things changing and becoming more refined and seeing how Krishna is working this, then you become more in a way where you're relating with Krishna and seeing his hand in everything. And the more we progress along those lines, the more we can understand how the goal is to become like this. Okay, it's okay to be analytical, but we also should allow and cultivate some true friendship, personal relationship with the personality of Krishna, Balaram, Radharani, Lord Chaitanya, just as we do with other devotees. This is what that part that I read from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he describes that there are two reasons for his advent. The Lord wanted to taste the sweet essence in the mellows of love of Godhead. He wanted to taste them with his Nityasiddha associates. And he wanted to propagate devotional service in the world on the platform of spontaneous attraction. So we shouldn't think that Krishna doesn't want us to do that. He does. That's why he comes here. That's why he displays these pastimes. That's why he brings, one of the reasons, he brings his Nityasiddha associates here to display these pastimes. Madhyasoda, by the grace of the Lord, could understand the real truth. But then, the Supreme Master, by the influence of the internal potency, Yogamaya, inspired her to become absorbed in intense maternal affection for her as his son, as her son. Commentary. Discerning the truth in this way, Yasoda desired to give up her sense of possessiveness. But then Lord Krishna thought, who will cuddle me? When Krishna thought in this way, Yasoda became overwhelmed by the very form of affection for her son. Putra sneha mayim. That's the Sanskrit in the verse. The word mayim in this phrase means affection itself, namely prema, in the form of parental affection, vatsalya bhava. The word mayam, here indicates bewilderment. In other words, Yasoda became blinded by prema. Immediately forgetting, the next verse, 44, immediately forgetting Yogamaya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Yasoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection for her in her heart for her transcendental child. Commentary. Just as one quickly forgets a dream through the influence of Maya, Yasoda forgot completely about the universal form. In the presence of Aishvarya Gyan, or knowledge of the Lord's opulence and majesty, intimacy and affection is restricted. Now being unrestricted, Yasoda's affection increased even more. Sukadev Goswami describes Yasoda as Parvidya Sneha Kalila Hridaya, one whose heart was completely covered with increased affection. And then this Paribhasya Sutra of Krishna Lila is spoken. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Yet Mother Yasoda considered the Supreme Person her ordinary child. Hearing this pastime, Maharaj Parikit said, what possible austerities could Mother Yasoda have performed to have the Supreme Personality of Godhead call her mother and suck her breasts? And what austerities could Nanda Maharaj have done? What did he do? What? How? In other words, what is the process by which I can attain that? Or how did they attain this? What is that process? And that's another class. Hare Krishna. Jai. Any questions or comments? Yes, Trivikram.
Quick little comment. In the voice itself, you read something about Marut, King Marut and thing. Mm-hmm. He, of the kings, Marut was very famous. In the sense, he used to perform great yajnas. He used to have like miles and miles of table of prasadam. Mm-hmm. And all the utensils were made of gold. And those utensils are... Somehow, maybe by the sacrifices he was doing, he became very, very wealthy. And he had tons and tons of gold. So he had buried some of that gold in the Himalayas. And when Maharaj Yudhisthira was doing the Rajasuya sacrifice, I think one of the sages told him that there's gold there because he didn't have any wealth. How would he do it? So he sent Bhima and the other brothers go into the Himalayas, dig up the gold, and utilize it for the sacrifice.
Oh, thank you so very
much.
That's a noted point in that term.
James.
Isn't that why Arjuna is called Dhananjaya? Because he went and got that wealth?
When he conquered one part of the world, he got wealth from Maharaj Yudhisthira.
So this is when all the Brahmins took the gold plate and just threw... Rather than taking the gold with him, they would just bury it. So it was buried in that mountain.
Yeah. Well, apart from the plates, he had like all the gold, but it was so much gold, really. Some were buried in the Himalayas, and he took it. But there was another point there that when Abhimanyu died, one of the sages were telling Yudhisthira that even Maruta, a great king like him had to die also, and he was explaining the story how he was doing yajna with so much gold and everything, but he said even him had to die also, so don't overly grieve.
Thank you. Madan Prabhu, Madan Mohan.
I remember once when Prabhupada was discussing this pastime with Mother Yasoda's and Prabhupada's charm, he said, after Mother Yasoda saw everything inside, she shook her head and then said, "Well, don't do it again." It's just so sweet, I think.
Dai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki dai, Srila Prabhupada ki dai.
Get on the stage. That was